Yeah. 2 weeks ago, we saw Shaul with his moment of triumph when they fought against Amon. Initially, he had been crowned as king. It had not gone well. Some of the people had not accepted him. Then there was the crisis. The king Nachash of Amon had attacked Yabesh Gilead, and that was Shaul's moment to shine. Sends out the animal and pieces to the rest of the nation, unifies the people, whole country comes together, they all attack, it's a brilliant success. The Navi says that the pachad of Hashem came onto the people, they go back to Gilgal, there's a rejuvenation, we're getting rid of the legacy of the Shoftim, we're coming back into the land of Israel, Shmuel has a reincarnation of Shaul, they're bringing Karbanos, like everything was amazing. And we might have forgotten that when we initially met Shaul, when he was looking for the donkeys, we saw that there were a bunch of warning signs about Shaul's character and his potential as a leader. Warning signs which were not at all in exhibition in Perek Yud Aleph. But this week we get to Perek Yud Gimel and everything is going to go down the tubes immediately. Because we're going to find out, it was very nice and wonderful and exciting for Shaul to be such an effective leader against Nachash, the king of Ammon. But Nachash, the king of Ammon, really was the minor leagues. And in order to be a successful king, we are going to have to face the actual enemy who has really been a problem for Bnei Yisrael from Sefer Shoftim till now, and that is the Plishtim. Plishtim who are on the Mediterranean coast, not Ammon, which is, you know, some desert tribes on the other side of the Jordan River. So this week, Shaul is going to have to take on the Plishtim, and we'll see. Not going to go well at all. What's going to be important is to figure out why that was. So if we just remember some of the foreshadowing points we had seen about Shaul's character when he was with his lad running around looking for the donkeys, and then Shaul is very sensitive to his lad, he's very sensitive to his father, and he's humble. But we saw at every point a strength of Shaul show that there was a weakness. He was humble, but he wasn't the leader. He spent days traveling up and down the country looking for the donkeys, but he gave up right at the moment when they were in Shmuel's backyard, just when he's about to be near the person who can give him the answer. That's the moment where Shaul finally wants to give up. And then his Na'ar tells him, you know, we should go to visit the Ro'ev, we should visit the seer, he can help us out. And even then Shaul didn't want to, because he said, we don't have the money to pay him. And Shaul's Na'ar said, well, I have the money, I can handle this. So we see Shaul is humble, he's not a leader, he's pushing hard, but has this tendency that's going to come up here again, resurface itself. He gets almost all the way, but almost all the way is not enough. All right, that just means failure. We saw that he respected Shmuel, but he didn't understand him. He called him the Ro'eh instead of the Navi, and more problematically, he thought that Shmuel would not help him unless he could offer him money in return, which when we saw last week, we saw Shmuel's closing message. Shmuel reminded all of Klal Yisrael, he never asked for anything in return, even to defray his travel expenses as he travels up and down the country judging. Shmuel did everything out of his own pocket. Shaul was respectful. He said, look, how could I go to ask Shmuel a question without having a gift to give him in return? It was respectful of Shmuel, but he didn't understand how Shmuel worked. And maybe lurking behind that is Shaul doesn't really understand what Avodas Hashem looks like. He's going to imagine that a relationship with Hashem is a quid pro quo. I give something and I get in return. It's not how Hashem operates. It's not how Shmuel operates. And that's going to be exposed this week. The bottom line we had for Shaul was that he looked impressive. When the Navi first introduced him, it stressed his appearance. He's tall, he's good, he's striking physical appearance. But the question was, underneath the outward appearances, did he really have what it took? Perek Yud Aleph, it seemed like it. Perek Yud Gimel, we get to the real push comes to shove, and very, very quickly, it's going to look, it looks like we're in trouble. So if we look at Perek Aleph, we'll unpack Perek Aleph. Look at Pasuk Aleph, we'll unpack it for a little bit because it is kind of an infamously problematic Pasuk, and then we'll go on from there. So the Perek begins, right? This is after, if you recall, Shmuel has just, we've had Shmuel's last speech. He just blasted his father. There was the storm, there was the thunder. So now we shift. It's now Shaul's moment. Shmuel has retired, and now Shaul is the king with Shmuel available as a Navi. But in theory, Shmuel has retired from political leadership. He's signed off. So the Pasuk says, what on earth does it mean? Ben Shana Shaul b'malcho. Shaul was 1 year old when he ruled. Ushtei shanim balachal Yisrael. And he ruled Bnei Yisrael for 2 years. You see that the old JPS translation, they leave it as a blank. Shaul was blank years old, which is one theory that's out there. It's a very hard line to understand. All the Mefarshim ask, struggling to understand this pasuk. The Ralbag, who probably gives the answer that's most in line with the Pshat, also states the question, or most succinctly, he says, "Hinei Yeshvan Hazaras Ma'od B'zeh Pasuk." This is an extremely weird pasuk. First of all, obviously, Shaul was not 1 year old when he became king. Second of all, says it's very difficult to think that Shaul was only king for 2 years. Now, he does some of the math. The Rabbeinu Yeshaya, the Rid, one of the other main Rishon, Rabbeinu Yeshaya lived in Italy. He's more well known for his Talmudic commentary, but he has a commentary for Sefer Shmuel as well. And they just ask, it doesn't sound like all of Shaul's career lasted for only 2 years. Rabbeinu Yeshaya says, you know, if I look at how long David was on the run for while Shaul was chasing after him, he says, I put it together and I have David running around for a year and 4 months. So if we think of all of Shaul's career, he becomes king, he fights Ammon, they fight the Plishtim, David is crowned, you know, David is anointed, Goliath, the happy times with David and Shaul, the sad times with David and Shaul. For that to all be compressed to a 2-year window is extremely hard to swallow. So what does the pasuk mean? So we'll look at a couple of interpretations. They're all important. Ralbag has the most probably straightforward way of understanding the pasuk. Ralbag says, when the pasuk said that Shaul was ben shanav malchav, it doesn't mean he was 1 year old. It means he had been king for a year, and then he was king for a second year. Why are we splitting up Shaul's reign like this? So explains the Ralbag, if you remember, when did Shaul really become king? Now, technically, Shaul was crowned as king in Perek Yud, but there was a failure to launch. He was crowned as king. Nobody respected him. He went back home. We get to Perek Yud Aleph, and we see Shaul, who is on the farm with his oxen while there's a national security crisis. So he was entitled he was the king, but he wasn't really the king until a couple of weeks ago, Perek Yud Aleph, when there was the victory over Ammon, and Shmuel said, let's go down to Gilgal, the Nechadei Shel HaMelucha will renew the kingship. So Rabbah says that's what's happening over here. Shaul had, there was 1 year, there was a whole year apparently, where Shaul was just a passive, ineffective, ignored king, the same person who was hiding in the baggage, Nichba Ela Kelim, when he was first announced as king, basically spent a whole year that way. That's Ben Shana Shaul B'malcho. Then there's the battle against Ammon. He actually becomes the king, says Rabbag Chadshu HaMelucha Bel Gilgal. And then we have another year go by. So Shaul has been a king for a total of 2 years, but it's really only 1 year, right? It's like, you know, the Mishnayot sometimes will say, Shtayim Shehin Arba. There are two which are really four. So here it's a case of, there were two, which was really one. Shaul was originally crowned as king 2 years ago, but he's really only been serving as a king for a year. And that's been the year since the victory over Amon, when he was recrowned and this time accepted as king. That's probably the most straightforward way in the Mefarshim to understand this pasuk right here. And it's important to consider that if this is true, then the Navi is reminding us about Shaul's ineffective passive first year, right? The last we've seen of Shaul has been the moment of glory. He's celebrating with the people. There's victory. He's thanking Hashem. There are karbanos. Everything's wonderful, right? We come back to Shaul now after we had the Shmuel speech. And the Navi first thing is remember that first year where Shaul was a passive and ineffective ruler. Shadowing what's going to come. Within this view, we should just point out, the Malbim has a good insight, which is, he says, okay, great. So Shaul became king a year ago. Why is he only fighting the Plishtim now? As we're going to see, Bnei Yisrael by this point are living under pretty oppressive Plishti domination. So Malbim says, well, just like when the Halacha and Sefer Dvarim tells us that when you want to go to war, so anyone who just got married or just planted a vineyard or just built a house, so the Torah says we give them a year to get things set up and get things in order. So Malbim says the same thing happened here. Shaul was accepted as king 1 year ago. Now he knows his job is going to be the number one problem. The reason why Bnei Yisrael wanted a king in the first place was to have someone who's going to fight against the Plishtim. But he's not going to do that in 2 weeks. He needs to take some time. He's going to take a year, get things organized, get his generals together, get his army together, make a plan, and then we're going to fight. So we've had one ineffective year for Shaul, one effective year, and now comes the moment push comes to shove. But there are a couple of other interpretations in the Rishonim for this pasuk, which are very interesting and insightful in terms of Shaul's career. This Rabbeinu Yeshaya, right, again, he's called Tosfos Rid, Rabbeinu Yeshaya Ditrani. He's from Italy, student of the Balei Tosfos. So he also, right, he's very bothered by the pasuk. You know, Efshar Lomar came? Now, how is it possible that Shaul was only king for 2 years? So his suggestion, very interestingly, is that, not like the Ralbag, we're not saying that Shaul has been king for 2 years. Tosfos Rid says Shaul was king for only 2 years. Why? He's king for much more than that. So his suggestion is that we only count Shaul's years as king until David was anointed. And we know there's going to be a long time where David is anointed, but Shaul is still the king. So Rabbeinu Yeshaya says David was anointed 2 years into Shaul's reign. And already by that point, even though Shaul is still the one wearing the crown, he's not really considered a king anymore. Now, you can ask on Rabbeinu Yeshaya that basically the same question that he asks on the Pasuk, right? Rabbeinu Yeshaya is bothered because he says, if I look at how long David was a fugitive for, I can't imagine Shaul's whole reign was only 2 years. But by the same token, it feels like Shaul, you know, is significantly older than David, for one. I mean, you know, we think of Yehonasan more as David's colleague than Shaul. Even Yehonasan is older than David. He's 7 years older than David. So to think that Shaul, who's a fairly young man when he becomes king, already is, we have David being anointed 2 years after that, is also hard to accept. But we can just maybe twist it a little bit and read the pasuk as saying that, you know, spoiler alert, at the end of Perek Yud Gimel, Shmuel is going to tell Shaul that he's being fired. That's like, you know, it's going to be over from the get-go. He's getting fired at the end of Perek. So even if David isn't anointed, the Navi might say he was king for 2 years before he got fired. And then there's the long, slow, brutal unraveling of Shaul's kingship, but it's going to be depressing. It's going to be the rest of Shmuel Aleph. It's It's going to take a long time, right? Perek after perek, Sha'ul is going to descend and descend and descend and descend. So the pasuk could just mean that, you know, we had two good years. We're having this battle, Perek Yud-Gimel. Shmuel is going to tell Sha'ul he's fired. And for the rest of the time, he's king in name only, but things are dropping. That's the second view. That's what you have from Rabbi Yishai. The third major contribution from the Rishonim comes from Rashi. And Rashi quotes a Medrash, which is absolutely essential for understanding Sha'ul's character. Rashi quotes the Gemara. We'll look at the Gemara inside in a minute. Which reads that first strange line of the Pasuk in line with the Pshat. Sha'ul was 1 year old. Ben Shana Sha'ul b'Malka. He was 1 year old when he became king. Okay, what on earth does that mean? So he says, Amar Rabbi Yosi Nuzal, Ki ben Shana Shalo Ta'am Ta'am Chit. Sha'ul was like a 1 year old, in that just like an infant, he had never sinned. Interesting. Right. He has the innocence of a very young child. That's the midrashic interpretation of the pasuk. Now, we scroll down to source number four, we'll look at the Gemara. We'll see why this is so important. Why is it so important that Sha'ul has never sinned? Right? So, titled the Shir, The Flaws of the Flawless Leader. So, it's right here. We're going to come back to this Gemara in a couple of weeks. You know, 2 weeks we'll do Sha'ul and Amalek. Yoma Chav Beis Mebeis. A lot in Yamid is absolutely essential for unpacking Sha'ul. We're going to see part of it now. We'll see more of it in a couple of weeks. It's like when we began Sefer Shmuel, we saw the Gemaras in Brachos, Lamed Aleph, were essential for unlocking Chana. This is the Gemara which really unlocks Sha'ul. So Gemara says, Ben Shana Sha'ul B'malcha, who was a year old when he became king, Amar Rav Huna, Ki Ben Shana Shalo Tam Tam Chet. He was like a year old in that he had never tasted the taste of sin. Sha'ul was young, extremely innocent. Right, as the pasuk introduced him, he was tov, good, perfect, kind, thoughtful, wonderful candidate for the kingship. Maskas of Nachman Bar Yitzchak. So Nachman Bar Yitzchak asks a logical question. He says, "Well, have you seen any 1 year olds? Beima keben shana shemeluchlach betinim tzoa. Yeah, he's a filthy baby." You know, why is 1 year old an angelic, sweet, pristine child? Right? What do babies do? Why they roll in the dirt all day long, right? It's filthy. Why are you reading the pasuk so kindly to Sha'ul? Okay, so Mara continues. Achiu leit Rav Nachman siyuta b'chalme. Rav Nachman had some terrifying dreams. Rashi says they're terrible. Shavim or Mazikin, who came to Rav Nachman in a dream and basically, you know, warning him that he made a mistake when he gave his sarcastic interpretation of Sha'ul the day before. So he comes into the Beis Medrash the next day and he says, Neinesi lachem atzmos Sha'ul ben Kish. He says, you know, I have to answer to you the bones of Sha'ul ben Kish. I'm sorry for what I said yesterday. Take it back. Where I says, what's good enough? Hadar chaza siyuta b'chalme. He went to sleep that night. Same thing happened. You had the bad dreams, right? Warning, you gotta give Sha'ul more respect. So he comes to the Beis Medrash the third day. Amar, neneisi lachem atzmos Sha'ul ben Kish melech Yisrael. Okay, so he's reformed. Right? He gives Sha'ul the proper respect. Sha'ul the son of Kish, the king of Israel. I take it back. Ben Shana, he was perfectly innocent when he became king. Okay, but the Gemara, which Rashi has quoted, Rashi sent us here, continues, and it's going to show why this is so important, the fact that Sha'ul was flawless at his beginning. Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Mipnei Ma Lo Nimshecha Malchus Be Sha'ul, why didn't Sha'ul's house continue to rule? Mipnei Shelo Hayabo Shum Dofi, because his house did not have any problems. He was too good in terms of lineage, or too good in terms of personal behavior. It was the fact that Sha'ul had never experienced failure before, which sets him up for failure now. to Omar, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadak, in Ma'amid in Parnas al HaTzibur. We never establish a leader for the community. Ella and Cain, Kupa, Shal Shratzim, Tluyolo, Me'achora. Unless, you know, you can basically translate this as, unless he has skeletons in his closet. Shem Tazuach Taito Alav, Umrin Lo Chazor La'achorecha. Because if he gets too big for his britches in his new leadership position, will remind him of his past. So that sounds like it's addressing lineage, but also addressing personal behavior. It is the fact that Shaul never experienced failure, never had a moment where he had done something wrong, that leaves him completely.
It keeps freezing. Can you hear? It keeps freezing. No, I'm telling Noach, it keeps freezing. I'm telling Noach.
I agree. It keeps freezing.
Yeah.
I sent him a note in the chat.
And I WhatsApped him privately on the side.
I muted. Okay. I just, one second. Sorry about that. I'm not sure. Wi-Fi here is a little inconsistent. Anyway, where are we up to? Oh, yeah, right. Right. So the Gemara concludes, right, that if the first time that they are going to have to admit to wrongdoing is when they're in a position of leadership, they're surrounded by the sycophants and the yes men, and, you know, they're the king, good luck. It's never going to happen. Tshuva is difficult enough for regular people. If you've never had to grapple with that experience of failure beforehand, you are doomed, right? In a lot of ways, Shaul was too good to be king. But that's why the passage began. When he was first introduced, he was Tov, he was good, he was better than everyone out there. So that's what the Gemara focuses in on right here. Ben Shanav Malcho. Shaul hadn't experienced sin. He hadn't experienced failure. He comes from a prominent family. There's no embarrassment in his history. There's no struggle in his history, no adversity in his history. And if he's going to get that first moment as king, he is doomed. It's too good, right? That is the perspective the Gemara gives, and that's the insight that Rashi brings when we're first introduced to him here in Perek Yud Gimel, right? Shaul's promotion to the big leagues, the real challenge in Perek Yud Gimel, we had like the easy warm-up 2 prakim ago. Now, first thing we want to tell you, says the Gemara, is realize what the problem is. We're going to see, Shaul can't do tshuva. He can't admit that he's wrong. And it is the fact that he had not had to do that until now, that's just going to leave him exposed. Okay, so that's Shaul's character and the warnings about it coming from the first pasuk. Shaul, the pasuk that we're recapping the last 2 years of his reign, one passive year, one accepted year. Rabbi Yeshaya's suggestion that after 2 years, once he's going to be fired, he's already losing his status as king. And Rashi, quoting the Gemara, that it's calling him a year old. The reason why it sounds like it's referring to his age is because that is flagging his Achilles heel. And that is, you know, ironically, his Achilles heel is that he had never sinned. He had never had to grapple with wrongdoing. Okay, so the Navi now takes us, you know, to live to the scene of the battle. And we're thrown right in. Navi says, he chooses 3,000 men. He sends most of the army home, which, you know, we could wonder why on earth is he sending most of the army home. We'll talk about that in a couple minutes. But he keeps only 3,000 men. He splits his force. 2,000 are with him. 1,000 are with Yonasan. You know, we can imagine Yonasan right now, probably, in his late teens, you know, maybe maximum 20 years old or so. But when you're the crown prince, you don't have long to wait until you're going to be tasked with major military responsibility. He is his father's second in command. And as we'll see, despite his youth, he at least is going to be more than up to the challenge. Yonasan takes the lead. He attacks the Plishti garrison in the neighborhood. Plishtim are upset. Shaul blows a shofar. We're going to call Bnei Yisrael together. And the people all go down to Gilgal. So that's the opening move. The Navi introduces us to like a few things that we're kind of surprised by. First of all, apparently there are Plishti garrisons here. Where are we? So it happens to be, if you look at this case from Google Maps. So the villages here of Geva and Mechmas actually still have those names to this very day. It's fascinating, right? We're north of Yerushalayim over here. Right? Here's the Kotel, Ma'ale Adumim. So a little bit north of Yerushalayim, Givat Shaul, the biblical Givat Shaul, which was Shaul's capital, was a little bit north of Yerushalayim. To remember, at this point in Jewish history, we still do not control the walled city of Yerushalayim. That's never been conquered from the Canaanim. But the surrounding parts of it, Bnei Yisrael have taken over. Shaul's capital is probably over here. And apparently, says the Navi, there is a Plishti garrison right here. So this is in the heart of Jewish territory. The Mefarshim point out that even though Shmuel had his successful battle, right? Shmuel's one battle with the Plishtim was successful in Perek Zion. But towards the end of Shmuel's career, as the people begin to slip, the Plishtim begin to encroach again. And by this point, they've already penetrated deep into the heart of the country. So you have Shaul has his men over here in Michmas. Yonasan is one hill over in Geva. He assassinates the leader of the Plishti garrison over here. So that's basically a declaration of war. And now we're going to have to fight. Right? That was sounds like they pick a year. They plan a strategy. This is the provocation. And now here we go. Okay. Now, why do they go to Gilgal? They go to Gilgal because this had been what Shmuel had kind of cryptically told Shaul way back when they first met in Prakim Tesen Yud, the whole donkey story. Shmuel had told Shaul, right, after you see all these miraculous signs, eventually there's going to be a point where you're going to go down to Gilgal, you're going to have Karbanos, and you're going to wait for me there. That did not happen right away, because after Shmuel got home from the donkey visit, Shmuel did not call everyone to Gilgal. Shmuel called everyone to Mitzpah, and that's where Shaul was crowned as king, but it didn't really succeed. Remember, Shaul went home, so we never had this moment. Shmuel had given Shaul this cryptic command. There's going to be a point, you're going to go before me to Gilgal, I'm going to go there, and you're going to wait 7 days, and then you're going to wait for me. That already, according to Rabag, was 2 years ago. So now finally is the moment where that is going to occur. So the Navi then continues and says, so we have the Jewish side of things. We have 3,000 soldiers, and we have an assassinated Plishti commander, and the Jews are now marching east, right? They're retreating from Michmas, where the camp, where the base originally was. Now they're marching towards the Jordan River. They're going down to Gilgal. So what are the Plishtim doing in response? They're not happy that their commander was assassinated. Navi says, the Plishtim asked Lachem Yisrael, Shloshim Aleph, Rechev, 30,000 chariots. That's a mind-bogglingly large number. Vesheshes Alephim Parasim, and 6,000 elite cavalry. Ve'am kechol asfas hayam lerov, infantry like the sand. Vayalu ve'achanu b'machmas kidmas beis aved. So right, the whole army marches no problem from the land of the Plishtim by the Mediterranean into Jewish territory. They march in mechmas, and the Jews panic. Pasuk Vav says the pasuk, the people panicked and they hide. They hide in caves and arod, chavachim, sulaim. Right, they're hiding in caves and pits. They're just, you know, panicked about the Plishtim. Okay, now to unpack this a little bit, we have to appreciate that the Navi here is drawing several strong parallels between Shaul's battle here and the story of Gideon. There are several points which are strongly connected. To show them, we'll talk about it in a minute. Right, there are three. One is the large army which is being reduced. Shaul he took 3,000 men and he sent the rest of them home. When in military history do generals decide that their army is too big and send people home? Does not happen very often, but Shaul does it here. Takes 3,000, the rest, shilach ish lo halav. And Gideon, of course, did the same thing. Gideon begins with a large army and then he whittles it down, not to 3,000, he whittles it down to 300. And then the rest, shilach ish la'ahalav. I should have called this, right? They're sending the rest of the army to their tents. It's point number one. Point number two, the Navi describes the two armies basically the exact same way. Gideon is fighting against Midian, and Shaul is fighting against the Plishtim. But both armies are described with, you know, cavalry, and you can't count them. Kechol shalsfas hayam l'rov. Right, that same line comparing the size of the army to the sand. And finally, the third, you know, blatant point of comparison between the two is what the Jews are up to. So we just saw that the Jews in Shaul's time are panicked and hiding from the massive army in the caves and in the pits. And when the Navi introduces the Gideon narrative, so it says the exact same thing. It says Midian would, you know, they would come in and they'd raid every single year and steal all the food. And what would the Jews do? They also didn't hide. Mi'arot, Mi'harim, Mi'arot, Mitzadot. They would just hide in the caves and the pits. Fine. So it's like undeniable that the Navi is evoking memories of the Gideon legacy when introducing the Shaul battle. And we're going to need to think about that over the next couple of weeks as we unpack this first battle. But we should just point out that this is not the first time we've seen shadows of Gideon associated with Shaul. When Shaul was originally introduced to us, we noticed that the Navi presented his introduction very similarly to Gideon's. Remember, both of them are, when they're told they're going to lead, so both of them are like recoil in total surprise. And they both say the same thing. Who am I? I'm from an insignificant family. I'm from an insignificant tribe. Exact same reaction they had. And both of them had subsequent events which were very similar to Moshe Rabbeinu's election, where they're told they're going to leave, they're going to save Klal Yisrael. They don't think they're up to the job of saving Klal Yisrael. They think Hashem made a mistake. They ask for a miracle, a sign, which is going to tell them that, they get a sign to tell them that this is indeed the case. Very strong parallels, which makes sense because Gideon is the most prominent, successful military leader we've had since the days of Moshe and Yoshua. He's also the closest thing he had to a king because they offered him the kingship. So it's an encouraging thing. It's an encouraging prospect that Shaul has the potential to have the same success that Gideon had. Save B'nai Yisrael from a far larger and more powerful enemy. Get them out of their caves, get them out of their pits, get them to fight, get them to have bitachon despite being so far outnumbered and win a historic victory. That's the potential that Shaul has over here. You know, the Navi Yeshayahu actually describes Gideon's victory. Gideon's victory over Midian is so total and complete. We never hear of Midian as an irrelevant enemy force after Gideon's victory. They are done. It is a permanent, total, and complete wipeout. They are gone as a strategic enemy for all time. And hundreds of years later, Yeshayahu is talking about it. So when we introduce the Shaul-Plishtim battle with these same references, so that's telling us that we have the same potential in this moment. The crisis is terrifying. The military odds are horrible. But the potential for total victory is there. And if Shaul plays his cards right, we could end this battle having never heard of the Plishtim again as a relevant battle. David and Goliath would never have happened because the Plishtim were totally, totally wiped out as an enemy force. We'd never have David and Goliath, and we would have Yeshayahu, you know, hundreds of years later, celebrating Shaul's victory over the Plishtim. That's the potential that we have in this moment. As the battle, you know, continues, we'll see what happens. Okay, so right, kind of everything is set. The people are panicking. The army goes to Gilgal. The massive Plishti army is massing. So what happens on the Jewish side? So we go to Gilgal. Right. So the Jews are all going towards the Jordan River. Gilgal is right over the Jordan River. That's where Yehoshua set up the original camp when they crossed the Jordan River. So first, the Navi tells us, you know, some of the Jews keep going. The Ivrim Avru Es Hayardin Eretz Gad Vegila. Many of them keep running, right? They cross the Jordan River. It might be a bit of a sarcastic line. Usually Ivrim is not the nicest way to refer to Bnei Israel. So, you know, the Ivrim crossed the Jordan because they're running away. Many of them are panicking, and they want to get as far from the Plishtim as possible. Shaul holds his ground. He doesn't retreat over the Jordan River. Shaul odeno be'gelgal, v'chol ha'am chardu acharav. You know, people come with him trembling. Everyone's terrified. We have a few, small army. We just assassinated the Plishti leader. They're furious. We're in huge, they dominated us to begin with. Now they're, you know, on top of being so powerful, now they're angry. So everyone's terrified. Shaul's in Gilgal. Vayochal shivas yam lamoed asher Shmuel. So he waits the 7 days for Shmuel. Shmuel had said, wait for me 7 days. Veloba Shmuel a Gilgal. Shmuel, it isn't showing up. Vayafetz ha'am me'alav. And the people begin to scatter. He only had 3,000 people in the army to begin with. And now they're beginning to scatter. By the way, right, why would Shaul reduce his army to 3,000 men? Probably because when you are going to be so terribly outnumbered anyway, you'd rather have a cohesive army than one which people are going to flee. Once, you know, as long as an army is fighting, it stands a chance. Once the people turn around and begin to run, that is when disaster strikes in battles. So ironically, you're better. Some of the Farshim say that this is, you know, there were rational reasons for Gideon to shrink his force. You're better with a small, cohesive group that will fight together than a larger group which is just going to turn around and run and just bring everyone down. You know, you think of like the Spartans against Persia. You're militarily, ironically, you can be better off with a smaller army. But it's one thing to have 3,000 people who are ready to fight. People now are even leaving. We're going to see Shaul's left with 600 men. So his already shrunken army, he's going to lose more than two-thirds of the people he has. I mean, it's not looking good. You know, we might think of, you know, Aaron at the golden calf waiting for Moshe, and Moshe's not coming, the people are agitating. And that's the moment, you know, where the people are agitating that really shows you have the stuff to be a number one, or are you really a number two? And Shaul caves. It's the fact that people are leaving. Vayomer Shaul Hagishu Elai Ha'ola Ve'ashlamim Vayal Ha'ola. Shaul says, we have to bring the karbanos. And Pasuk Yud, Vahike Chalos Elalos Ha'ola V'inei Shmuel Ba Ve'etzi Shaul Lekraos Elabarcha. As soon as Shaul had offered the Ola, Shmuel shows up. So what's happening here? Shaul, let's look at the positive. He assumes he has to bring karbanos before going to battle. He has faith in Hashem. He can't possibly fight without offering karbanos. That's good. And he tried to wait for Shmuel. And he waited for 7 days. And he waited even though the people were beginning to leave. But push comes to shove, right? He got far, but not far enough. Remember, he looked for the donkeys? And then he just got to Shaul's hometown, and he stops looking. He waits 7 days. He gets the people to wait for 7 days. And you can imagine the panic, because any minute, the Plishti army might march down from Michmas to attack them in Gilgal. Right now, we can hurry back up to Michmas. At least there, we're in the mountains. We'll have the high ground. They'll have the high ground. We can stand a chance. Gilgal is in the Jordan Valley. If the Plishtim will just march down to the valley, they'll have the high ground and the numbers. We have no chance. So the Jews need to get back to the mountains as quickly as possible. So Shaul holds them almost long enough. And he assumes he needs to bring karbanos, but he doesn't really understand what Avodas Hashem is all about. That it's not about giving God an animal and then you're going to win the battle. It's about observing what the Navi tells you to do. So all those weaknesses that Shaul had demonstrated when he was first, we first met him, he was led by his na'ar. He almost got the donkeys. He wants to pay Shmuel. It's all exposed over here. He can't maintain his leadership over the people. He can't wait long enough for the karban. And on the one hand, he wants to bring karbanos, but he really doesn't understand why. And he goes to Shmuel, and he goes to give Shmuel a bracha. And Shmuel just says, this is a disaster. What did you do? And now, remember that Rashi about, the Ben Shana Shal B'Malcho, that instead of Shaul saying, I blew it, I panicked, I made a mistake, I should have waited 7 days, but instead I caved at the last minute, Shaul gives excuses. Blames the people. I saw the people were scattering. He blames Shmuel. I saw that you didn't show up. He blames the Plishtim because they're coming to attack. He blames everyone in the whole story except for himself. He can't say the one word, chatasi. Can't say, I made a mistake. And then he elaborates further, and he says, the Plishtim were coming to me, and of course, I had to give Hashem something, but as a pak, I forced myself, va'aleh ha'olah. What does it mean, I forced myself? The Chumash uses that word when Yosef is forcing himself to maintain control in front of the brothers. Explains Rashi. And we will close with this because it really just captures the degree to which Shaul misses the boat. And then we'll come back to this next week. Says Rashi, v'esapak, nischazakti al ritzoni. I overcame my ritzon. Shaul thinks he's defeating his Yetzer Hara. He thinks he's defeating his Yetzer Hara by disobeying the Navi. Shahaya libi omer, lahamtin lach, really, really Shmuel, I wanted to wait for you, but I just decided I didn't. I wanted to wait for you. That's what I wanted to do. But I decided I didn't have a choice. I decided, even though that's what I want, this is what we have to do. Al karchi hamanati es libi va'ala ola. I forced myself to bring the carbonola. So the closing image we have then of Shaul, it's tragic, right? If someone who is just so out of touch with what Hashem wants from him. All Hashem wants is listen to the Navi. Don't think, don't rationalize, don't explain. And Shaul is blaming everyone. He can't take responsibility. And he doesn't even realize that what he thinks of as him defeating his Yetzer Hara is actually him giving in to his Yetzer Hara. And it all makes sense because he hasn't experienced this before. You know, the Gemara, which says the Malkum Shabali Tshuva Omdin, that people who have experienced tshuva are at a level that no one else can reach because they know sin, they know what the Yitzhahara means, they're familiar with the Yitzhahara, and they know how to defeat it. Shaul just hasn't had that experience. And here you have someone who is so confused and so overwhelmed and so crushed by the pressure that the moment of caving to the Yitzhahara and disobeying the Navi, he is able to convince himself that he's being righteous, that he's being good, that he's actually doing the right thing. So you have someone who's supposed to be the leader, he's the follower. You have someone who is supposed to be taking charge, but he's not even aware of what's going on with himself, let alone being able to take charge of the rest of Klal Yisrael. So we'll unpack this more next week, we'll do the rest of Yud Gimel and more of Yud Daled, but we should just appreciate, you know, Shmuel is going to tell Shaul, you're fired, and he never got a nevuah to that effect, but it could just be that Shmuel reads the situation, he sees what things are like, says, this is not someone who's ever going to succeed. The first moment of crisis to be so off base in terms of how to relate to the enemy force, how to relate to the Navi, how to relate to Hashem, how to relate to themselves, this is not someone who has what it takes. He looks impressive, but on the inside, he's not someone who can lead. That has been exposed in this moment. And then, you know, we'll flesh that out a little bit more next week. And then we'll come back and we'll see, you know, what actually happens. Because, you know, at the same time that this drama is happening, we do actually have an enemy of thousands and thousands of Plishtim who are bearing down. So sorry for the Wi-Fi. I got to figure out what's going on with this. So hopefully we'll speak.